The gospel reading this morning is from the book of John. Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." Then the Jews began to complain about him because he said, "I am the bread that came down from heaven." They were saying, "Is not this Jesus the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How can he now say, 'I have come down from heaven'?" Jesus answered them, "Do not complain amongst yourselves. No one can come to me unless drawn by the Father who sent me, and I will raise that person up on the last day. It is written in the prophets, 'And they shall all be taught by God.' Everyone who has heard and learned from the Father comes to me. Not that anyone has seen the Father except the one who is from God. He has seen the Father. Very truly, I tell you, whoever believes has eternal life. I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness and they died. This is not the bread that comes down from heaven so that one may eat of it and not die. This is the bread that comes down from heaven so that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats of this bread will live forever, and the bread that I will give for the life of the world is my flesh." In reading upon this passage, there is so much that can be explored theologically, but there was one facet that really provoked my spirit, and that is the issue of identity. We're going to explore Jesus' identity as he reveals that to us in this passage, and what we can learn about our own identities as humans and as Christians in reading this passage. But before we go there, I want to just bring you to a place in your own mind where you can recall in your own life a period when perhaps you were struggling to find your own identity. And I think we probably all have in common surviving junior high. That's that awkward transitory state when your child self and your adult self collide like two thrown buckets of paint in the air. I remember for me, it was when bangs were big, perms were bad, and women wore shoulder pads that rivaled the NFL. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Cyndi Lauper was talking about how girls just want to have fun, and Madonna was prancing around, heralding the merits of being a material girl. So I was trying to find my way during this special time in our history. And naturally, being a part of the culture at the time, I had a purse the size of a suitcase. I carried a full-size can of hairspray in my purse. It was Rave, and I would have done anything if I could have gotten my hands on a battery-operated curling iron, because it would have fit in that purse. But while I was trying to play grown-up, I also would occasionally fancy myself to play on the playground at McDonald's, and my favorite toy on the playground was the Big Mac Jail. Does anybody remember that? It was shaped like a hamburger, and it had these bars that ran around the middle, and you climbed up through this tube, and you could sit in the middle of the hamburger. Now, if you didn't do that yourself, you maybe had kids that did. So my friends and I would sit up there in the hamburger, and we would plot who we were going to marry. So that was kind of that juxtaposition of am I a child or am I an adult, and how do I make sense of what's going on with me? What is a hamburger jail have to do with Jesus? Let's look at what Jesus tells us about himself in this passage. He says, "I am the bread of life." Now, is there any one of us amongst us who could stand up here and say that? No. But with what amazing conviction he could speak. That conviction tells us about his identity, how he knew his identity. He knew where he came from. He knew whose son he was. He knew what his existence was, and that existence was a spiritual one. Yes, the great mystery of the incarnation is something that we cherish and that we are so eternally grateful for, that God became present amongst us. But the ultimate reality that Jesus talked about was the spiritual one. So when he says he is the bread of life, we know he's referring to something far greater, far deeper, of immense magnitude, and that is our spiritual selves. He didn't come down here just to say, okay, guys, I'm going to teach you how to be nice to one another, how to get along, how to be happy. No, he came down to feed our souls, that which is our base level of existence. Jesus cuts to the chase in this passage. He's telling us, I know who I am. My ultimate existence is indeed spiritual. Do you know who you are? What your ultimate existence is? Now, he nods to the reality of the physical, of the material, by talking about the manna that came from heaven. There's no denying. Yes, we have physical needs. But is that what the truth, the essence, the ultimate reality of our existence is about? When he says, I am the bread of life, does that recall an Old Testament story, perhaps of Moses and the burning bush? And Moses says, ask God, what is your name? And what is God's response? Somebody tell me. I am. Now, how do we make sense of that? It sounds enigmatic. It sounds esoteric. It sounds elusive. What does that really tell us? Well, his response being the verb to be. I am life. Life. What you know is life is me. There is no life without me. So Jesus is reiterating that concept when he says, I am the bread of life. Now, this sounds kind of floaty philosophical. And I know in younger days, I would hear something like this and go, that sounds pretty, but I have no clue what you're talking about. So let's put some meat on these bones. Let's see if we can reverse engineer. What does it mean for Jesus to say, I am the bread of life? We're going to reverse engineer this by looking at what we know that God is, that Jesus Christ is. And we can do this, let's start with the book of John. The theme of the book is God is love. And then we can also look at countless places in the Bible, but just a real simple example is the fruits of the Spirit in Ephesians. And I have to admit, I have to read them. I have a bad memory. They are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, trustfulness, gentleness, and self-control. So if these things are the fruit of, or the descriptors of, what is God, and if God, Jesus, is to be, and these things are what we know are of God, then is to be these things. Jesus invites us to participate in this living bread, to eat of this living bread. So is indeed perhaps the invitation to live in its fullest by experiencing, by being those things, love, joy, peace, gentleness, kindness, goodness, etc. Now this sounds pretty. I like it. But let's be aware, there are some pitfalls if we're not careful. We don't want to start thinking solely about the spiritual realm to the point that we can polarize our perception of the material realm. Because it is easy to start thinking, oh dear, well, if this is all that and a bag of chips, then I guess my physical self is bad. It's evil. And then we can start bordering on self-mortification or denigrating the very physical existence, whether it's our own bodies, other people's bodies, or even the earth that has been given to us. The other polarization is to do exactly the opposite. If the spiritual realm is the ultimate existence, well, then it doesn't matter what I do with my body. Let's just have a good old time. And it becomes a license for debauchery. And of course, the Christian church has a history of these debates. This is nothing new. You know, if people think, well, but in my heart, I believe in Jesus, but I'm going to go do this because it doesn't really matter. Do either of those extremes sound like a viable, healthy response to the material world? I don't think so. So what's a healthy approach to understand our material selves in the material world? Maybe Madonna knew more than she thought of. A healthy response is to respect, honor, care for our bodies, other people, the earth, because it is a gift from God. But we know that it is only temporary, that it is not our ultimate existence. So, Jesus knew who he was. He knew when he says, I want to, he invites us to believe in him. He knew what he was, that in believing in him, you have the opportunity, you have the invitation to have communion with the Creator of the universe, the sustainer and the redeemer. This is not just saying blithely, I believe. This is not a pass to some great after party in the sky. Because frankly, this has happened a lot in our culture. I've seen this happen, I'm sure we all have. Where the emphasis is on, if you just believe, then you've just bought yourself an eternity of bliss. No. We know what it is to be in the Spirit, what it is to be who God is, who Jesus Christ is. It is love. What did Jesus teach us? Let's just name two or three. Jesus tells us, not just to love others, to love your enemies. Not just to forgive, but to forgive 70 times 7. Not just to pray, but to pray for those who persecute you. That's what he's asking you to believe in. It's great if you believe that Jesus was God incarnated. That's super. That's just the beginning. Because that is nothing if you don't believe in the Spirit of who he is and who God is. So if I were to ask you today, and let's just say not me, just say you were asked, who are you? What's the first thing that would come to your mind? Your name, your age, your hair color, your eye color, what you do for a living, how many kids you have, where you live, what your hobbies are? Or do you identify firstly and foremostly with the spiritual being that is you? Because here's the deal. You don't have a spirit. You are a spirit. You are a spiritual being. And to say that we have a spirit in us is actually dislocating ourselves from our true identity. To know that you are a spiritual being, and that spiritual being is what has communion with God, that is to know yourself. How do you know that you know your spiritual being? Let me give you a couple of examples. Let's say that you find yourself in a situation where you feel like you're being persecuted. Now, that's almost laughable to say that in Highland Park, okay? But I think just about every individual has experienced something that they would consider to be a form of persecution or some kind of inexplicable suffering. When you find yourself in this situation, what responds to it within you? Is it your mind? Are you calculating how you've been wronged? Is it your heart saying, I don't deserve this. I'm a good person. Why is this happening to me? Do you feel a knee-jerk response to retaliate? Maybe not even in words, but maybe in thoughts? Or does that spiritual body that is you respond and know that no matter what's going on around you, what's happening to you is not really happening to you? Because you are in communion with God. So we're talking about making choices, really. We have the choice to respond out of our human nature, or we have the choice to respond out of our spiritual nature. And there are times when you need to respond to a situation, and you know, I need to be loving to this person, even though this person is being vile to me. And I'm going to speak for myself, but I've had a relationship in my life where I resented the heck out of being loving. Have you ever done the right thing but resented it? So then the question is it better to do the wrong thing and feel authentic, or to do the right thing and be angry? And for years, while I was dealing with this particular relationship, I asked myself, why do I keep responding lovingly even though I'm pretty darn resentful about this? And I didn't know the answer for a long time. But you know what? I'm here to tell you. It is better to respond lovingly and resent it than to do the wrong thing and have to then clean up whatever collateral damage happens there. Because what happens, your spiritual being is similar to your physical being. You exercise it. You discipline it. And so eventually, you know what happened with me in that particular situation? Eventually, I was able to respond out of love, not because I was forcing it, but because God had changed me. God had transformed me in that particular situation. My spirit had been disciplined. And it became a matter of, it's not about what I'm doing, I am now being. You guys follow me on that? You cannot just be something, just wish it to happen. If that were the case, then we would just say, I want to be like Jesus. Woohoo, make it happen. Doesn't happen that way. And that's where our human nature and our spiritual natures collide. Think of it in terms of if you've ever gotten on a diet and an exercise program, and you're eating so well, you're not having the ranch dressing, you're not having the chicken fried chicken, whatever. You're exercising, and you're going, but I still weigh the same, or my jeans are still too tight, or whatever. But you stay the course. And then suddenly, one day, you slip on that pair of jeans, and you're like, holy moly, there's room here. Have you ever done that? Or something like that? And you're like, where did this come from? Well, what had happened was your discipline regarding your diet and your exercise became ingrained as part of your habit. You lost focus on the results, and you just became that. And then the results naturally happened. It's the same thing with spiritual discipline. Don't think about, I have to be this. Just do it. And then God will make you be it. So to believe in Jesus, and this is something that I have frankly struggled with for many, many years. What does it mean to believe in Jesus? Because I have heard it said so many times, just believe. And then you turn around and you watch people who say, I believe, and then they just do horrible things. Not just once, but they live that way. And that was always a big turnoff for me. To believe in Jesus is firstly to believe in the truth of his spiritual being and what that meant, like I talked about earlier. Loving your enemies, forgiving those who persecute you, etc. But it's also to believe in your own spiritual being. You have to identify with your own spiritual being and know it. Know that that is who you are. And then those two things together, when your spiritual being is utterly dependent upon the communion with God, who God is, when you realize that you are nothing. Because see, I've heard that for years. I'm nothing, I'm pond scum. And that would turn me off because I needed to hear that I was loved. But that's the irony. You are loved. You are love. God is love through you. And so when you realize that everything that you truly are is God within you, God through you, then you know yourself in the fullest sense of the word. We've got some truckers in the back room, apparently. Thank you. I'm going to close with this. I have a little devotional that I love to read out of. It's published by the Catholic Church called the Magnificat. And true to Catholic form, they highlight different saints within this devotional. And I'd say probably 90% of the saints that they highlight through this devotional are little vignette stories of people who have been martyred, who were killed for their faith. And I read this one, and I'm scanning to see if we have any children in the audience, and I don't think we do, so I think I'll be safe with this. This one where a gentleman, they call him St. Paul, and he has a Chinese last name, do not know how to pronounce it, in 1900 was killed in the Boxer Rebellion in China. And he was a Chinese Christian. He was going out to tend to his fields. He was a farmer. And the Boxers, this militant group, who were persecuting Christians in China, came up to kill him. And he knew it. And as they approached him, he said, "I'm not standing on my land. I'm standing on my neighbor's land. So if you're going to do this, let's go to my land." So they walked over to his property. They tied him up, and they dismembered and disemboweled him. The whole time he's praying. He knew his identity. He knew it in the deepest, most profound way. He was a spiritual person, a spiritual being, rather, who knew that you can take my body, but who I am, you cannot kill. I pray that that never happens to any of us, but I also pray that God can teach me and teach you that same level of awareness of who we are.